Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you're a member of Congress, you deal with lots of big issues: Iran and nuclear weapons, highway funding, cancer research, sanctuary cities, and even Planned Parenthood. Then there's the blossoming race for the presidency. And if you're a Republican, you face questions about Donald Trump. And if you're a Democrat, you've got to answer questions about Hillary Clinton. Today, we'll get to all that with our two area members of Congress who are here in the studio with me. Emmanuel Cleaver is a Democrat representing Missouri's 5th District. Congressman, always good to have you here. Welcome back. Kevin Yoder is a Republican representing Kansas's 3rd District. And Congressman, nice to have you too.
Thanks for having me on.
And if listeners want to chime in on the different issues we're talking about today, please do. Give us a shout, 816-235-5925, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Well, Congressman Cleaver, let's begin with Ferguson and the one Michael Brown's death. You've been in Ferguson. You've spoken in the area. Obviously, the tensions continue. Lots of arrests, violence. I'm wondering about your thoughts about all of this today.
Well, I'm a little frustrated because, frankly, there is nothing that has transpired over the last year that would justify some pretentious demonstrator coming out with a gun and firing at police. So I'm disturbed about that. You know, you can't think and shoot at the same time. So I don't think that's doing the movement any good. And there have been changes. They've not been as significant as all of us would like, but you know, you have a new police chief. You have a new. You have two new African Americans on the city council. Not new, but two additional African Americans. The police chief has been fired. The city manager has been fired. The court administrator was removed along with the municipal judge by the state Supreme Court. That's not a little tiny issue. So we made progress, but the city was almost four decades behind the rest of the nation. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take a long time to get things straightened out.
You know, and yet I want to get your reaction to a story this morning on CNN, Congressman. And the story goes like this. A year after the fatal shooting of Michael Brown sparked a firestorm in Ferguson, the city is still pumping out thousands of new arrest warrants and jailing people over minor offenses. This practice continues despite a scathing report from the Department of Justice in March that found that Ferguson's police department and municipal court were unconstitutionally targeting low-income and minority residents with tickets and fines for minor offenses, often in pursuit of revenue. CNN saying this issue continues unabated.
It does. And it's taxation by citation. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned this morning, 2 years ago, a city of 21,000 people received 31,000 citations. That's at least one citation per person plus 10,000 for visitors. And so the city is still surviving only on traffic tickets. There's virtually no industry there. In spite of the consent decree with the Justice Department, they are continuing. And so anytime you have a lot of stops by police, you're going to end up having a conflict. It's inevitable. And these are unnecessary stops. So, we're going to end up with another Michael Brown situation because nothing has changed in terms of the way in which the city is financing itself. I think that the police department needs to be eliminated or folded into the St. Louis County Police Department because Ferguson obviously does not have the capacity to run its own police department.
Hmm. Congressman Yoder, I wonder if you can reflect on race relations 1 year after Ferguson. What are you seeing? What are you seeing in your neck of the woods? You know, sometimes I talk to some of my students up the hill at UMKC, and they talk about some of the African-American students talking about it's difficult to drive through Prairie Village sometimes without they worry about driving through Prairie Village and they fear getting stopped unnecessarily. What are you seeing in your own backyard of Johnson County and in Kansas City, Kansas?
Well, obviously, we've certainly watched what's happening in Ferguson, and so I think people in our community are very aware of it on the Kansas side of the line. Certainly, we haven't had any such incidents like that would be of nearly the same proportion, but I think we're all concerned about it. I don't know about challenges maybe from folks going through Prairie Village and others. Areas, I would say that there's a really good relationship between local law enforcement and the members of the community. I think some of the things that Emmanuel has outlined regarding the over-ticketing and things that we're hearing about in Ferguson, I haven't seen as many of those issues. But I think we just always need to be aware that these things can happen anywhere, and that just because it's Johnson County, or, you know, I represent Wyandotte County, Miami County, that a bad relationship between the police and the community can happen anywhere. Racism can happen certainly anywhere. Our community dealt with a different form of crisis just last year when there was a shooting at the Jewish Community Center. And we had three innocent victims shot because the shooter was anti-Semitic and had decided to perpetrate a hate crime. And it came from Missouri, but came right into to Overland Park near where I live and struck terror in our community. So this arises in many different forms, Steve, and it's not just a police issue. There's also certainly all sorts of issues, and I would say many people in my community believe so strongly that law enforcement does a good job, and that they are in the line of duty, and we respect and appreciate men and women who are willing to put themselves in the line of duty to keep us safe, and just want to make sure there's a good relationship with our community. Let me just also say, Emmanuel has been such a national leader on this issue, and I had supported a resolution that he shepherded through the House that would encourage and promote the idea of body cameras for police.
I was just going to go there.
Yeah, and I supported that and had been a co-sponsor of it, and Emmanuel is leading that in Congress.
So. Well, where do we stand with that, Congressman Cleaver? Because as Congressman Yoder just said, you are a big proponent of police body cameras. There's big concerns, obviously, over cost, big concerns over digital storage and the capacity to maintain all that data. Where are we with that issue?
Well, I went to John Boehner, Speaker Boehner, and said, look, can we go on record as a legislative body, as the top legislative body in the country, in support of body cameras with police officers. He said, as he fanned the smoke in his office, he said, look, I support.
He's a smoker. He is.
And he doesn't hide it.
Yeah.
But he said, look, I support body cameras, and we ought to do it. And so I went out, and I was able to get Kevin and his bipartisan bill. Mm-hmm. We got it through the House very easily. So the majority of the people, I am convinced, support body cameras. Had the St. Louis County Police, which was actually people on TV are reporting that it was the Ferguson Police that shot this 18-year-old. That's not accurate.
Just the other day, yeah.
Yeah, it was the St. Louis County Police. But if we'd had the body cameras and the cameras on the police car, there would be no discussion today. Mm-hmm. So we are failing to eliminate a major problem by something that is relatively inexpensive. And hopefully Congress can pass a body camera bill that would also carry with it a fiscal note, so that
I was going to say you've passed a resolution, but you haven't passed a bill with money attached.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's a bigger
issue.
That's
the problem.
Mm-hmm. Is that coming?
Well, I hope it does, because if we can get that done, I think just about every major city in the country that applies for what's called a burn grant could get body cameras or have their own body camera program enhanced with federal dollars. That's where we got to go.
Congressman Yoder, would Republicans in the House back something like that?
I think so. We certainly probably focus more on the national debt and fiscal issues that have sort of driven the Republican majority. We've kept a lid on spending, and we can discuss those this morning. We're actually spending less money today than when I walked into Congress in 2011 in terms of discretionary spending, and that's the non-entitlement side. It's pretty notable. So I think the challenge we have with any new spending is we have a sequester in place, and we still have yet to agree in a bipartisan fashion between taxes and spending and the whole deal, how we get to a place where we're all on the same page of balancing this federal budget. So I'm always hesitant when we talk about new spending items, because I think we'd want to find a way to pay for it, either by cutting another program or something. But I think, to Emmanuel's point, is that the burn grants are there, and you could make them make this as part of the areas that those could fund.
Right.
So some of the existing dollars could also be reappropriated to this project without increasing the debt burden.
We're visiting with Kansas Congressman Kevin Yoder, Missouri Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver. Gentlemen, let's move on to a different issue. Congress is expected to vote on the proposed Iranian nuclear deal in the next few weeks. Congressman Yoder, you've been highly critical of the deal that the Obama administration has crafted here with Iran. Why?
Well, I think this deal will ultimately lead to Iran getting a nuclear weapon. This is the first time in our history where we have changed our premise that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon to they can enrich some uranium, they can spin some centrifuges, but they just can't build one yet. And in 10 years, I agree with the Prime Minister of Israel that Iran will have a nuclear weapon. I think it has too many concessions to Iran. Iran really wins in this deal, and the United States doesn't get much in return. Iran gets amnesty for one of its leaders who has been responsible for killing a lot of Americans, yet we don't let four American hostages out of Iran. Iran gets an end to the arms embargo that's going to allow them to buy arms from China and Russia, which is one of the reasons those countries support it so strongly. They also get a release of over $100 billion in frozen assets, which even the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, President's Joint Chief Chairman, says some of that money will go to be used against Americans and will go towards supporting terrorism.
Well, help me here. Secretary of State Kerry, the President of the United States, all saying that this deal will keep a lid on, will halt Iran from building those weapons. That you're saying just the opposite here.
I'm saying we're sanctioning
it. How can you have both views?
So I think there is a deal that could be made, but this is a bad deal for the United States and its allies like Israel.
So you say in 10 years they're going to have a weapon?
That's right. That's right. The inspection period here is a 24-day period. We have to reveal intelligence, so we have to go and say we think you're enriching uranium here, and then they give them 24 days to open it up to us. So,
but the administration really says there's traces of radioactivity. You'll be able to tell even 24 days later.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, Iran has been, secretly trying to build nuclear weapons for a long time, and it's taken intelligence to vet that out, and so. I think it's a weak inspection period. And I'd just rather see us, Steve, be very clear that Iran can't build a nuclear weapon, that will proliferate the Middle East, that Saudi Arabia will build nuclear weapons, that it will destabilize the world, and that cutting a deal with them to say that they're not going to get access to build a nuclear weapon ever, that they have to release these hostages, that keep the arms embargo in place, that they can't be a state sponsor of terror. There's a better deal here that we could get. And yeah. I'm not one to really question motives or be cynical here, but I do wonder if the administration is more interested in getting any deal before the president's term is over than the best deal.
Congressman Cleaver, where do you stand on this thing?
Well, I spent about 28 hours on Air Force One with the president and had—
Coming back from Africa recently.
Yes.
We had you on talking about that, yeah.
So I had a lot of opportunities to talk to him directly and raise a lot of tough questions and received a lot of answers. Having been in Congress 11 years and avoided with great intentionality classified briefings for a variety of reasons, I have gone to the classified briefings on this matter. This is the first time I've done it in 11 years. Secretary Manise, the Energy Secretary, is considered to be one of the top 10 physicists in the world. And I had an opportunity to speak with him, and he says there is absolutely no way that Iran or Russia or China or the United States can dispose of material, the residue from materials used in making an atomic bomb. So the 24 days, they can't
escape.
It's
irrelevant, they say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's not a problem. We make an atomic weapon with uranium and plutonium. Those are the two main ingredients that you need. And they leave traces even 60 days, 90 days. Now, this is not about right now during this show, Iran is a threshold nuclear power at this very moment. The deal tries to cut them off at every possible way in which they could go around us. And there are a lot of things that are not in this deal that many of us would like to have in the deal. I agree with Kevin. There would be a lot of things that I would like to add. The problem is that the negotiations that were being held dealt exclusively with nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. So it didn't deal with all these other issues.
Mm-hmm. And let me go to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. Congressman Cleaver, so you back the proposal?
No, I told the president. I've read everything I could read. things I should have read in the eighth grade, about plutonium and uranium. But I'm struggling trying to come to a rational decision, because I think that people can disagree with me and still be a good human being.
So still undecided here.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to a phone call on this. David from St. Louis. David, welcome.
Well, two different things tied to this nuclear deal. You just reminded me of the 1954. There's a U.S. postage stamp called the Atoms for Peace Program. And it claimed, basically it's telling the American public in 1954, that the nuclear power plant being built up the street could not be turned into a bomb. Now, they were either lying back then or they're lying now. Now, the second thing I wanted to bring up, and this is Congressman Yoder was just talking about how they might spend their money. Back in Jimmy Carter's day, and that's decades ago, we froze this money. It got frozen because of Ronald Reagan and the October surprise. And we've been hanging on to hundreds of billions of dollars of theirs for decades. And for the Joint Chiefs of Staff to interfere in a foreign policy decision, that's not right. That's smell a coup. Or it smells like the military-industrial complex is trying to beg for some more money.
So your question about the money we're holding, David, is what?
Well, first of all, it's inappropriate at least for the Joint Chiefs of Staff to try to subvert a foreign policy decision of the president. That stinks of coup. And the second angle of it is that if we're going to continue to act like jerks, maybe they will spend it on military. But if we act like we're honest brokers in a treaty, then the Atoms for Peace program won't turn into a weapons program.
I'm not sure I'm tracking his point, Congressman Yoder, on Jimmy Carter, the freezing of the assets. Help me there.
I think what he's saying is that we don't have a right to freeze these assets, that they've been frozen for a long time, is what I understood the gentleman to say. And while I appreciate the point, I think it does have a military component to it, because that money is going to come back to the battlefield against American soldiers. We know Iran is the largest state sponsor of terror in the world. We know that while we're dealing with this agreement, that there are rallies shouting death to America, and the Ayatollah is speaking at these American at these rallies and echoing the same thing. So how any of us could sort of say we trust Iran or don't think that they have intentions when they're saying death to America? The other thing when you deal with Israel, the position of Iran is Israel has no right to exist. And it's really hard to work in agreement with an entity that believes you have no right to exist.
Yeah.
There's really no compromise from what partial existence or no right to exist. They want to wipe Israel off the map, and they want to take us along with it. And so I think concessions to Iran is exactly what will embolden them. And I would, the caller brought up Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan's position was peace through strength, and that weakness invites aggression. And I think we are inviting Iran to believe that we are scared of them. And this is going to be a rallying cheer in Iran. Polling out shows most Americans believe Iran does better, much better in this deal than the United States. And I think that's true no matter how you slice it. I think the question for my colleagues who are undecided is whether they think they're better off without it. But I think it's hard to argue that Iran isn't a winner in this deal and isn't going to have their economy bumped and have more strength to their military because of it.
Well, New York Senator Chuck Schumer just came out in a very high-profile rejection of this deal, saying in 10 years we won't be better off than we would be today. Procedurally, Congressman Cleaver, I'm confused what happens next year. Both houses of Congress now will vote on this deal the next few weeks. Congress is expected to reject it, if I understand correctly. The president presumably would veto that rejection. Then there would be an override attempt here, right?
Yes.
And that's an unusual sort of conglomeration of actions in a situation. This is not a treaty. This is a different kind of arrangement, right?
Right. In a treaty, we'd have a whole different situation. The Senate would
the Senate would be dealing with it, yeah.
But let me say that this issue has already become so messy. For the first time in the history of the United States, and I think this is extremely important, the first time in the history of the United States, two things happened that I think bode poorly for the future of our country and my little 5-month-old grandson. 47 senators sent a letter to Iranian leaders and said, disregard your negotiation with President Obama, because Now, this is long before the deal was presented.
Very controversial letter.
Yes. Yeah. No matter what happens, the next president or Congress is going to overturn it. So they, in fact, empowered the Iranians with that letter. Senator Cotton, I think, Tom Cotton.
Of Arkansas.
Of Arkansas, yeah. Orchestrated it. It has never happened in history. And then the second part, and these things are going to have some impact. The Prime Minister of Israel was invited to challenge the President of the United States, at least on this deal, in the United States House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Never in the history of the Republic. It would be like,
So your overall point here is?
My overall point here is that the deal has been damaged and shrouded in all of these other issues that I think are doing enormous damage. So I think many members are acting with regard to all the other things that have happened. So when it comes to the House of Representatives, there is the chance, I think, of sustaining the president's veto. It's very slim, but I think it is there now.
Mm-hmm.
And the failure to do so is going to impact our children and our children's children, because we are weakening not Barack Obama. He'll be, somewhere in Chicago, but the presidency. And I think if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. So future generations are going to the next time Democrats are in a similar situation, I think it's stupid, but that's the way Washington is working. They're going to start inviting, somebody over to speak who's opposed to the president.
Let me move on to one more issue before a break here, gentlemen. Another big one in Washington these days that very much affects Kansas and Missouri, that's highway funding. President Obama just signed a 3-month stopgap bill preventing federal highway bucks from drying up, but he criticized lawmakers for failing to agree on a longer-term measure. He said this: "We can't keep on funding transportation by the seat of our pants. That's just not how the greatest country in the world does business. I guarantee you that's not how China, Germany, and other countries around the world handle infrastructure." Congressman Yoder, why can Congress only muster a 3-month bill? This has been an issue that's been kicking around Congress a long time.
It has been, and it's been, I think, for 6-7 years at least. We've done, I think, 30-some straight extensions, and I think both of us will agree that that's no way to run a railroad. It's no way to run the highway
system. What's the issue?
Well, I think the issue is where you find the revenue. And, the gas tax right now is 18.4 cents. It's been that way since early 1990s. I don't support raising the gas tax. Most members of Congress don't. I don't think the administration does. Emanuel does, but George H.W. Did not. He was the president when we raised it last time. It's been a long time.
So you want to raise revenue?
Fix up infrastructure. A lot of families in both of our districts are struggling, and this is a tax that hits working families right in the pocketbook. It used to be a user fee, and the concept was the money went to highways, but now the money goes to ferries and trolleys and mass transit, subways all across the country.
Bernie Sanders wants a tax Wall Street.
Yeah,
a
lot of those people aren't paying into the system. So the question is it going to be a user fee? That changes the discussion, but it's not these days. It goes to all sorts of things.
Why not tax Wall Street? Like Bernie Sanders.
The Senate passed a bill that would sell money out of the petroleum reserve, and it would put a tax on banks. And they fund about 3 years of a 6-year plan. The House is looking at something I think that's better, that it will be bipartisan. I think that the president would agree with it as well, which is this idea of repatriation and changing the foreign tax code for dollars made outside the United States. Right now, it requires a 35% tax rate on it. The president's proposed making a tax hit on it, but not requiring that money to have that tax rate. Money just stays overseas. It doesn't come back. So I think there's some bipartisan agreement. I've heard the president espouses Chuck Schumer that we ought to repatriate those dollars, bring them back in the United States, which increases economic growth here. And the revenue, when you tax that money, would fund the highway system for 8 years. And so I think that's the bipartisan answer that avoids putting another tax on working families.
Congressman Cleaver, how is this, the stopgap approach, how is this undermining road construction in Missouri and Kansas?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I've been talking about transportation all around the district, going to chambers, and because everybody's concerned about it and what it's doing to Missouri. And so at a couple of the places I spoke, in Independence, when I spoke to the chamber, there were people there from MoDOT. And they will say what I've been saying all along, unless you have a six-year program at the minimum, local highway commissions cannot do the planning necessary to maintain a superior system of roadways and bridges in the country. We are falling behind. I was in China a few months ago. They're spending 9.2 GDP on infrastructure. Europe, the EU essentially, 5.6, I think, and we're at 2.4 and falling further and further behind. We need, and I think the repatriation, I used to think that might work. The problem with the repatriation is that the last time it was done, according to congressional research, CRA, the last time it was done, we lost $3 billion. And what I think we have to do is pass legislation on transportation that is indexed so that Congress, which cannot get its act together, is out of it henceforth and forevermore, and it automatically changes as the cost of living rises.
Let me grab a phone call here to Annette from Lawrence. Annette, you're on Up to Date with our congressman. Good morning.
Hi, I'm from Lawrence. I'm very honored to be on your program. And hello to both the representatives. This is for you, Mr. Yoder, because you're my representative, and I'm going to be nice. I want your clearest reason why you think we should defund Planned Parenthood.
And this is the issue. The organization has been accused of trafficking in fetal body parts. That's what we're talking about here, a hot controversy these days. Congressman Yoder, you want an investigation here.
Yeah, sure.
How come?
I appreciate the question. And I actually don't represent Lawrence anymore, which is sad because that's my alma mater. And but I appreciate it.
They knocked you out in the last redistricting,
yes,
right?
The courts took me out. So, well, I think whether you're pro-choice or pro-life, the idea in this country that we would create a market for the sale of fetal organs is abhorrent to all Americans.
And Planned Parenthood, just for the record, denies it. So, yeah.
So there's an investigation going on in Congress. I believe, you know, certainly that any money that didn't go to Planned Parenthood should go to other women's healthcare facilities, hospitals, safety net clinics. This is not about any way restricting those dollars, and maybe we need to be spending more in those areas. This is about, and I have a bill that would ban the sale of fetal organs that has several dozen co-sponsors. I encourage members of both parties to come together and make sure that we're going to investigate these allegations.
You think Planned Parenthood's guilty here based on what you've seen?
Based on what I see, I do. And I know a lot of people have tried to discredit the videos, and I certainly think an investigation has to be done.
Why not wait for the investigation to be concluded before you come out?
Well, so we're going to do that in September. But I believe that, you know, funding an organization in which individuals are at least that cavalier about it, and they're certainly negotiating over it, they're certainly talking about what they could get for it, there's certainly a market that they're trying to come to here. And so I think there should be an area. This, you know, intelligent minds disagree. That's fine. I'm pro-choice or pro-life, and we're going to continue to have this debate in this country. But can't we all come together and say the sale of fetal organs is wrong in this country, and treating aborted parts like, you know, car parts and selling them, it's abhorrent. And I encourage people to watch videos. I think they're really hard to watch. And that it, the
these are conversations
these are
around
conversations.
Lunch tables,
yeah,
for
people
instance,
are
people being taped talking about this.
And I've had pro-choice and pro-life people contact me and say, look, we disagree maybe on the fundamental issues here, but this has to stop. And we ought to be unified as a country to say this shouldn't be happening.
Congressman Cleaver, where do you come down on this Planned Parenthood issue? I haven't heard you speak out on this one yet.
About a year and a half ago when the new Honeywell plant opened, I'm walking in, and somebody walks up to me and asks me questions about the contamination at the old plant and so forth. And I said, look, that's not my job. The EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, does this. Well, the next thing I know, that video has been distorted to just say, that's not my job. So, and we've gotten so hateful in this country that, you know, we'll do almost anything to get our point across.
So you weren't convinced the videos are legit then?
No, I don't think the people in to use one of Donald Trump's favorite words, I don't think they're that stupid. I think that if that's found to be a fact, then they ought to be defunded, and a lot of other things ought to happen.
So, what do you think's going on here, Congressman Cleaver? What's going on here?
Well,
we have two people very much split on what's happening with this alleged sale of fetal body parts.
Well, I mean, I remember the Shirley Sherratt incident, the Sherratt family.
I don't.
They're civil rights activists. She was driving. She worked for the USDA, and she gives a speech, and in the speech she says, you know, I used to have this kind of issue, she said, but we've got to work together and so forth. They cut off everything except what was the most toxic part of what she said, which had no relevance whatsoever.
So is this a political hit job on Planned Parenthood? Am I hearing you correctly?
I hope it is not. But I think we need to have a full and complete and unbiased investigation to see if they are, in fact, discussing the selling of fetal parts. The people I've talked with said, you know, of course we're not doing that. I think this could be politicized like almost everything else is.
Are the two of you convinced that we'll have a full and complete and impartial investigation here?
I don't know who's going to do the investigation. Maybe if the FBI does it, I'm good with it.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to some phone calls here. Let me go to Pam from Overland Park. Pam, you wanted to speak about the Planned Parenthood issue. It's nice to have you.
Hi, thank you. First of all, we're all pro-choice. I'm really offended by that differentiation. We're all pro-life. And secondly, I want to address an issue that I've been trying to get Congressman Yoder's office to address, which is Estrace cream has doubled in the price. I've been to the office. I've done a lot of research.
What are you talking about, Pam?
Estrace cream. It's a vaginal cream that hundreds of thousands of women use. Their response to my concerns about the doubling of the price, it's now almost $300 a tube. Is that, and also the women that see my gynecologist are in a panic about it because they can't afford the cream. Okay.
Are you able to help her at all, Congressman?
I'll have to talk to my staff on this. I'm not familiar with the issue, but I'm happy to look into it.
Okay. Well, let's deal with it that way. I want to move on to another issue. We just have a few minutes left here with our two members of Congress. Congressman Yoder, a U.S. House committee just approved your amendment to withhold Homeland Security funds from cities and counties that don't strictly enforce federal immigration laws. The amendment targets so-called sanctuary cities, which conservatives argue allow undocumented immigrants to skirt deportation. What are your concerns about sanctuary cities, and why are you engaged in this issue?
Sure.
From the 3rd District of Kansas.
Sure. Well, certainly immigration affects us all across the country. What happened in San Francisco was shocking, entirely avoidable.
And what happened, remind our listeners what happened in San Francisco.
And a young woman lost her life. In San Francisco, the police had arrested an individual by the name of Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, who has been convicted over 5 felonies in multiple states in the United States. Look, the Obama administration doesn't have a policy of deporting everyone. They have a policy of focusing on violent criminals, and that's an area, hopefully, at least in that area, we can all agree. They said, look, this is a bad guy, and we want to deport him. He doesn't need to be in the United States. And San Francisco refused to cooperate. They refused to give them notice when they were going to release him. There's quote after quote from ICE saying, we didn't ask them to enforce the law. We didn't ask them to hold him any longer than they were allowed to. We just said, let us know before you release him because we want to come pick him up and deport him. Well, San Francisco has a long position of being a sanctuary city, and their position is they don't cooperate with immigration and customs officials. They wouldn't turn him over, and they said, we're giving him sanctuary in San Francisco. He then was released. He went out, and he killed a woman on the pier whose last words were, help me, Dad, out there in San Francisco.
So why are you involved in this issue here in Kansas?
So, well, I'm on the Appropriations Committee, Steve, and we decide how much money we're going to give local communities as part of grants programs. and Congress has voted in a overwhelming majority, as well as the subcommittee I serve on, that if sanctuary cities in particular refuse to cooperate, just refuse to honor requests that are lawful, that they are not going to do so with the support of the taxpayers. We can't make a sheriff cooperate or call into ICE and say, we have this person you're looking for. And the question, Steve, is sanctuary for whom? Sanctuary for the young 21-year-old woman or sanctuary for this five-time convicted violent felon who was released? And so I don't want this ever to happen again. I don't want it to happen in my community. I don't want it to happen in Emmanuel's community. I don't want it to happen anywhere in the United States. It's heartbreaking, and it's entirely avoidable. Now, this is different than what some of the sheriffs have raised locally, which is they have to have a lawful detention order to keep an immigrant or keep an undocumented immigrant longer than they have jurisdiction to do so. I called Sheriff Denning before we discussed this issue in Congress. He looked at the language, and I think most sheriffs will agree that they want to cooperate to the extent the law allows them, and that's not what happened in San Francisco. Even the San Francisco mayor said, gosh, this was not what we created the sanctuary cities legislation for.
Do we have sanctuary cities here in the heartland in Kansas and Missouri?
I don't know. I don't think so. You know, there's been one third-party nonprofit organization that has labeled some local entities as sanctuary cities, but what
Shawnee County supposedly has been labeled, and Shawnee County says we shouldn't be on that list.
By a third party that isn't responsive to you, me, or Emmanuel, or anybody. It's an immigration group. What my amendment says is that the Secretary of Homeland Security will certify whether a city is completely aiding and abetting and thumbing their nose and releasing folks that are here, particularly these violent felons that are set to be deported, and saying, no, we're going to give violent felons sanctuary in San Francisco. That's just wrong. And I think it would be hard-pressed, I think, for folks to defend what occurred in San Francisco. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
Congressman Cleaver, are sanctuary cities an issue in your portfolio right now?
No. Okay. I think what happened in San Francisco was tragic. The word sanctuary for me has theological connotations. And so I know churches have that. I held a guy in the church, St. James United Methodist Church, for 3 days. He had broken out of prison in Kansas, Lansing Prison, and he stayed there 3 days. We made a deal. He wanted to talk with his grandmother and a few other family members, and I arranged for a Kansas, Missouri police to pick him up on a Saturday after he had been there 3 days. He went back. And I think, you know, sanctuary is it's difficult for me to talk about it because that's it's theological and it's not as political.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here for our two members of Congress. I want to get, in just a few minutes we have left, to the 2016 presidential race, because this thing is smoking. It's obviously creating quite a ruckus. A new poll out in Iowa today shows Donald Trump continues to lead the pack. Congressman Yoder, are you a supporter of Donald Trump's?
Yes, he supports it.
No, I do not.
There we go.
I do not.
Why not?
We've got a bipartisan deal on this. Neither of us support Donald Trump, I think.
He's the front runner in your party right now. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's really early. We have 17 candidates. We have a lot of good people on that stage, I think, that would be very capable of being president of the United States, current and former governors.
Is he the guy you want to be the face of the Republican Party in 2016?
No, and I don't think he'll be our nominee. I think he's garnering attention, one, because the media is really, you know, interested in sort of his role in the race, which, you know, in an early part of the race where the race hasn't formed, the names that people know are going to get a lot of attention and get votes. I think you're seeing in both parties, Steve, a anti sort of established candidate mood. I mean, Bernie Sanders has more support than Donald Trump does. I mean, Trump's around 20-some%. I think Bernie's higher than that in the Democratic Party. And so I think in both parties, you're seeing a lot of folks who feel like the nominees are the same old, and they want someone totally different who's going to speak straight, who's not going to mince words.
And have you endorsed anybody?
I have not endorsed anybody.
Do you expect to?
I think I will at some point, and I'm certainly think there are some really good candidates up there, and I think any number of them, many of them are would be great presidents in the United States.
Who's your point to that? Who intrigues you right now?
I thought Marco Rubio did a great job in the debate last week. You know, he talked about working class issues and bringing the country together and was articulate, and I think he speaks to a lot of people. And one of the issues Republican candidates have had, Steve, is do they relate to the voters? Mitt Romney really didn't, and so I think we need a candidate who voters really understand, care about them.
Congressman Cleaver, you're a Hillary Clinton supporter.
I am.
A lot of folks having trouble trusting her these days. I've got 30 seconds left.
Yeah, a lot of the information out about all of the emails is bad information. Every Secretary of State prior to Secretary Clinton did the same thing, and they have come forth, said, yeah, we did it. So, and then I heard a news reporter say, yeah, but she's running for president. You know, they all do it, but she's running for president. And I thought, I'm getting a headache on this.
All right. Congressman Kevin Yoder, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, thank you both for a very good conversation here. Appreciate it very much.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for having us on.